KFIW Denmark, Green Bay's real news and great conversation, a Civic Media radio station.
This is a special report from ABC News New Orleans Attack. I'm Dave Packer. As the FBI searches for answers after the deadly New Orleans ramming attack, counterterror assistant deputy director Christopher Rea speaking directly to the loved ones of those who were killed and injured.
I want to send our deepest condolences to the victims of this horrific attack and their loved ones. 14 innocent victims were killed in this senseless attack, and at least 35 are injured.
Rea says federal authorities now believe the killer acted alone. Meanwhile, the Sugar Bowl college football game postponed yesterday after the attack to be played this afternoon. ESPN's Laura Rutledge.
Yesterday, both teams were sequestered at their hotels. Georgia had a shelter in place as soon as they realized what was going on and trying to gather more information. So they didn't allow any of their players, any of their staff, their personnel to leave their hotels.
And for those spectators going to the game today, they will be going through airport-level security. This is ABC News.
I'm Lisa Hale with WGBW News. Your news in depth. Find it in the news section at WGBW.fm. For 97.9 WGBW News, I'm Lisa Hale. Cold and more cold is ahead of us when we look at the weather. Feel like temperatures will be in the below zero range Friday and Saturday morning. Meteorologist Brittany Merlot tells us how to tell if you're getting frostbite.
Remember to cover all exposed skin. Frostbite can happen in as little as 20 minutes. Frostbite symptoms can include pain, numbness, swelling, blisters, and skin discoloration. It's most common on your fingers, toes, nose, and ears. And frostbite may lead to permanent, irreversible tissue damage. A way to prevent it is to limit your time outdoors and warm your body up often if you're exposed to freezing temperatures. And if you believe that you have frostbite, go inside or seek shelter from the cold. Then, call your healthcare provider or visit the emergency room immediately to reduce your risk of tissue damage. Frostbite symptoms appear in three stages that include feeling cold, sore, and painful, which is frost nip. Then, pins and needles, which is surface frostbite. And the last, numbness, indicates a deep frostbite.
The price for a gallon of gas should stay low well into the new year. With more, here's Civic Media's Jimmy Cuska.
Wisconsin gas prices have held steady for the past couple of months, and that trend should continue for several weeks. Here's Gas Buddy's Patrick DeHaan.
It's been a pretty good year. I mean, compared to 2022, the average price for gasoline this year in Wisconsin peaked at about $3.51 a gallon in July, and it's been below $3 a gallon for the last, month and a half? And it probably will stay below $3 a gallon for most of the winter. The next big increase in prices is going to be the seasonal rise that we see late winter, early spring.
DeHaan added that things could change, especially if tariffs are placed on oil imports. For Civic Media News, I'm Jimmy Cuska.
The U.S. has recently set records for oil production, contributing to lower prices at the pump. I'm Lisa Hale, 97.9 WGBW News. For news anytime, log on to WGBW.fm.
The Packers lose their top defensive back. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. Cornerback Jaire Alexander suffered a knee injury back in October against the Jaguars. Packers head coach Matt LaFleur asked if there were any updates.
Yeah, I would expect Ja, most likely he's going to be done for the rest of the year.
Is that injury related?
Yes.
So you having surgery?
Yes.
Alexander had his right knee scoped on Tuesday. A report says he could be back by mid-February if the Packers are in the Super Bowl. I asked safety Xavier McKinney what it's been like watching Jaire struggling to come back.
Yeah, it's been tough. You know, he's dealt with, you know, this injury pretty much all year. Obviously, we wanted him to be back out there, but, you know, injuries are part of the game, so we understand that. We know that he's been working, you know, or he was working to, you know, try to get back, but it's like every time he was trying to, he would tweak it again. So it's a part of the game.
NBA, the Bucks in action tonight in Milwaukee. They host the Brooklyn Nets. With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
Your news, conversations, and a whole lot of fun. It's all on your local Civic Media radio station or the Civic Media app.
More clouds than sunshine today, with a few flurries flying around out there, putting down just a trace. With breezy winds out of the northwest, it's creating wind chills about 10 degrees cooler, with highs today only expected to reach the low 20s. And the entire weekend, with highs in the teens, it'll be feeling more like the single digits. I'm meteorologist Brittany Merlot.
It's 26 degrees at our studios.
The Todd Alba Show.
What's going on in Washington today as we move into 2025? Have your antenna up. Don't rely on all the media sources, just your own wisdom, your own heart, your own gut. Listen to what they're saying about our friends and neighbors and family, because we innately know these people that we live with every day in our communities. Don't allow words and thoughts to tear us apart. Hold fast to that which we know, which is good.
The Todd Alba Show. Weekdays, noon till 2 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app. Matt Nair on air. This shouldn't be a thing.
Hot Dr. Pepper is the hottest holiday drink, but is it any good?
Jane, I'd like to answer that question.
Yes.
No. Have you ever had a hot soda in your life?
Yes, they're terrible. You can also do apparently 80% eggnog and 20% Dr. Pepper.
Get out of my country.
Matt Nair on air. Weekdays 10 till noon on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app. John Mino and Jim Schmidt.
On our next Mino and the Mayor show, we welcome Mark Houston from Bell and Sports Medicine.
And on Fridays, it's live music from Lyle Phillips.
Join us.
Mino and the Mayor. Weekday mornings 6 till 9.
You're listening to the Talk of Green Bay, WGBW, home for Matt Nair on air.
Welcome back to the Maggie Dawn Show. I am not Maggie Dawn. I am Dan Schaefer. I am your guest host this afternoon. Thank you so much for joining us. Joining me in studio today as my co-host is Angela Lang, the executive director for Black Leaders Organizing for Communities. She just wrote a terrific piece today at the Recombobulation Area, and we've been talking about that. The title of that piece is Where Do We Go From Here? So do check that one out. But another recent contributor for the Recombobulation Area is joining us for the first segment of the second hour of the show here. He is Jeff Mandel of Law Forward. Jeff, thank you so much for joining us here on the Maggie Dawn Show.
Thanks for having me, and Happy New Year.
Happy New Year. So we're having you on to talk about a piece you wrote a couple weeks ago at the Recombobulation Area. The headline of that piece is Wisconsin Act 10 is unconstitutional. What the ruling means. So, Jeff, what's the ruling mean? Can you break it down for us?
Sure. Well, you know, I think it means it has two sets of meanings that I'd like to talk about. Quickly, I want to mention the symbolic meaning. You know, Act 10, which was really, as listeners will remember, the surprise first order of business for Scott Walker's administration after he was elected in 2010, was one of two cornerstones of a right-wing takeover of Wisconsin. The first was passing Act 10 to disable public sector unions in Wisconsin. And the second was insulating those who passed Act 10 from any electoral consequences by enacting the nation's most extreme and durable partisan gerrymander. So symbolically, the strikedown of Act 10 is massive because both of those cornerstones of the right-wing takeover, the extreme partisan gerrymander and Act 10, have now been struck down as violations of the Wisconsin Constitution within a year.
Pretty big deal.
And that's really remarkable.
Pretty big deal.
Yeah.
It is a pretty big deal. But I also want to talk about the concrete actual consequences of this ruling, because those are also, I think, going to be significant. This will reintegrate public sector unions into public life in Wisconsin. Public sector unions are part of the lifeblood of Wisconsin. Public sector unions were invented in Wisconsin and were such a good deal that they spread across the nation. And Act 10 really cut those unions off at the knees and have radically changed our social structure here in Wisconsin over the past 13 years. And that's going to be able to come back. Those unions are going to be able to thrive again. And that is going to be good not only for the people who work in those unions, you know, our teachers, our the people who work in our prisons, the people who work for our municipal and state government, you know, the lifeblood of our communities. But research shows that when unions do well, the economy as a whole does well and everyone does well. And so this is not only going to help all of those public sector workers, our friends and neighbors who work for us and do essential work and make our society thrive, but it's going to help all of us.
We're talking with Jeff Mandel of Law Forward. He wrote a piece for the Recombobulation Era a couple weeks back on the Wisconsin Act 10 ruling. And I think it's so important to recognize that, you know, like you said, these two pillars of the Republican takeover when Scott Walker and Robin Voss and so many of the other folks took over in 2010 and 2011, those now being struck down. So I think one of my questions with this, though, and just when this news hit my feed, it was just like there's been so many legal battles over Act 10 over the years. You know, one of the things that I jumped out and said, maybe it's the cynic in me. Maybe it's, you know, I've seen these things go across too many times where it's just like, all right, is this actually going to hold up this time? Because there's been a lot of legal challenges to Act 10 over the years. And this one does approach things pretty differently. And you can explain that a bit further as well. But why is this different this time? And does this have a better chance of sticking than past judgments on Act 10?
Yeah, let me start with the why is it different piece, and then we can talk about the stickiness.
Yeah.
As you note, Dan, there have been a number of challenges to Act 10. When Act 10 was first enacted, people are going to remember tens of thousands of protesters converging on the Wisconsin Capitol in the dead of winter for days and weeks. The Democratic Senate caucus fled the state in an effort to stop this being rammed through the legislature without real discussion or debate. And ultimately, when the bill was passed, there was a lawsuit that said that it was invalid because the open meetings law in Wisconsin hadn't been followed. That lawsuit succeeded in the state trial court and then was overturned by the state Supreme Court. There were lawsuits in state and federal court claiming that the provisions of Act 10 violated the U.S. Constitution. And those lawsuits similarly succeeded and then failed on appeal, were then rejected on appeal. So what's different about this lawsuit? This lawsuit is about the state constitution, right? The U.S. Constitution in the 14th Amendment guarantees all citizens of the United States that they will have equal protection under the law. But state constitutions also contain guarantees. And state constitutions, including ours here in Wisconsin, are frequently much more protective of democracy and of basic rights than the federal constitution is. Just think about it structurally. The federal constitution is a document that starts by outlining how the government works, and then at the end, appended on are the amendments, including the Bill of Rights. They're sort of an afterthought. But if you look at the Wisconsin constitution, Article 1 is the Declaration of Rights. It's only after we've declared all the individual rights and all of the freedoms that we as Wisconsinites have, after that, right, in Article 4, we start to lay out how the government is structured and how it works. So it's just a different set of priorities. And the Wisconsin Constitution also guarantees equal protection under the law. And this is the first lawsuit that has really articulated a theory about why the Wisconsin Constitution's Equal Protection Clause guarantees, you know, that Act 10 cannot stand in a way that is different from the federal constitution. So that's the difference piece. And I think it does make a big difference. The theory, just in short, is remember that the idea of Act 10 was that public sector unions were going to be divided into two categories. There were going to be public safety unions, which were police and firefighters and a few others. And those people were going to continue to enjoy all of the rights that public sector unions had enjoyed in Wisconsin for 60 years. Then everybody else, the vast majority of our public sector workers, were going to be considered general employee unions. And those unions were no longer going to have most of the rights that public sector unions had and accumulated in Wisconsin over time. The argument in our case is that the it's not that it's invalid for the legislature to distinguish between public safety unions and others, but when it does so, it has to do so honestly. And what Act 10 did is it didn't do that in an honest way. Instead of a clean, straight line that said, okay, public safety folks are on one side, everybody else is on the other, it drew a meandering, winding line, kind of like a river creating a border between two states. And it did so not based on people's job descriptions, who's really invested in public safety and who does something else, but instead, everybody on the protected side of the line just happened to be a member of a union that endorsed Scott Walker's 2010 gubernatorial campaign. And everybody on the non-protected side just happened to be in a union that didn't endorse.
What a coincidence. What a coincidence.
What a coincidence.
What a remarkable coincidence. How could it possibly be? Yeah, I think that's what it gets back to, why this approach that you and the folks that you're working with are taking here is why this is different from previous challenges, that it recognizes the inherent problem of this bill. If Republicans believe in this across the board, it should be something across the board. They should pass something across the board, right? And not have it come down to, who endorsed who in a certain race.
That's right. So if you think that police should have police unions should have greater protections, then that should apply to the UW police and the Capitol police, just as it applies to local police and the state patrol. If you believe that everyone who has a public safety obligation, who carries a gun and is authorized to make arrests and enforce the law, has those protections, then the DNR conservation wardens should have those protections. And the way that Act 10 was written, it cut a lot of those people out because it didn't like their politics, not because of their job description.
Such a great point. Cardi, do we have a caller here ready to join us for a couple
do.
Minutes?
Yep. Let's get Mark on the line from Perry to Sac. Mark, you're on the line.
Hey, Mark, thanks for joining the show.
Not a problem. And I was one of those state employees that was impacted by this. I was actually a steward in the union. And roughly a week or two before Act 10 got dropped, Kathy Stepp invited us all into have a meeting, and she told us, well, Scott Walker's looking forward to working with all the unions, and then a week and a half later, 2 weeks later, Act 10 got dropped. Mm-hmm. One of the things that galled me is also the dishonesty of the reason that they had to do this as a budget-saving method is because Scott Walker actually blew a hole in the budget right before, to actually say, because I think we were actually scheduled to have a slight surplus at the end of that fiscal year. And Scott Walker blew a hole in the budget with his new legislation with the newly elected Republicans in the legislature. And said, well, this is the reason we have to do this, because the state is facing all these shortfalls, and also we have to go after the unions to help repair that shortfall. And beside the point of them splitting up the unions in two different categories, because I worked with a number of wardens that were required, they're required under law to respond to, local law enforcement if there's not a local law enforcement available. So why they were cut out is beyond me. I mean, that it's not beyond me because they didn't support Scott Walker probably, or not vociferously enough to support Scotty Walker. And so it was just divide and conquer anyway, and that, it's the attack on unions in general.
Yeah,
thanks so much for the call, Mark. Thanks for listening, and appreciate that perspective. We are coming up to a break here on the Maggie Don Show. I'm your guest host this afternoon. My name is Dan Schaefer. Jeff Mandel is joining us here from Law Forward. Angela Lang is my co-host today. So if you have thoughts on what we've been talking about here with Jeff's piece on Act 10, give us a call, 855-752-4842. We'll be right back.
The Talk of Green Bay, WGBW.
Hey, it's John Mino.
And Jim Schmidt from Mino and the Mayor.
Want to stay in the loop with all things Northeast Wisconsin? Sign up for the WGBW weekly newsletter.
Get the latest local stories, updates on the weather, and a special feature from our Mino and the Mayor podcast.
It's your one-stop shop for real news and great conversation in Northeast Wisconsin.
Log on to WGBW.FM today and get signed up.
Real news, great conversation. Sign up today at WGBW.FM/newsletter.
You're listening to the American Democracy Minute, keeping your government by and for the people. In November 2022, Michigan voters passed a constitutional amendment enshrining voting protections and expanding ballot access. After the legislature implemented the voters' directive, GOP legislators sued, claiming that only the legislature could make such changes. Proposition 2 mandated 9 days of early voting, protections for voters and election workers from harassment, and a tracking system for absentee ballots. It allowed for the funding of secure drop boxes and the counting of military and overseas ballots if postmarked by Election Day, and several other reforms. Conjuring the independent state legislature theory, which argues that the U.S. Constitution allows only legislatures to control election law, 11 Michigan GOP legislators sued. On December 20th, the Federal Sixth Circuit Court of Appeals affirmed the lower court's denial of the Michigan legislators' claim. But importantly, it did so saying that while the individual legislators had no standing to bring the case, a full legislature could, leaving the door open a crack. The U.S. Supreme Court mostly dismissed the theory in 2023's Moore v. Harper case, but Justices Thomas, Gorsuch, and Alito appear to be all in on the theory. For the moment, the pro-voter reforms in Michigan are safe, but be watching for the independent state legislature theory to pop up again soon. We have the decision at AmericanDemocracyMinute.org. I'm Brian Beal.
From Hobart to Bay Settlement, 97.9 WGBW.
Welcome back to the Maggie Dawn Show. I'm your guest host this afternoon. I'm Dan Schaefer, here with Angela Lang, who is co-hosting with me live from Racine, Wisconsin. And we are joined as well for this half hour of the show by Jeff Mandel of Law Forward. Jeff, thanks again for joining us.
Dan, I owed you a question. You asked me a second question, though, about whether this was going to stick.
That's right. So, yeah. Okay, just to reset for people who might just be joining us after the break here, we're talking about Act 10 and Jeff's piece on why what the ruling means and the recent decision to strike down Act 10. And one of the things that I was asking Jeff about was whether this time will be different from previous legal challenges. And because I'm cynical when it comes to these things.
Me too.
This will, you know, this news will hit the feed. Act 10 is struck down. It was like, all right, well, it's going to get overturned eventually.
Yeah.
Or whatever it might be. But as Jeff, you described in our last segment, why this is different. And so could you help us understand why this next step in the process might be different as well?
Sure. So we talked about the theory here and trying to make sure that when the legislature draws a line and treats people differently, it draws that line. It does so on the straight and narrow. It does so honestly. And that's not what happened here in Act 10. So the next step is shortly before Christmas, the trial court here in Dane County issued a final order, and the legislature has appealed, has taken this case up on appeal. So,
which was expected, right?
Entirely as expected. The court has is entertaining a question about whether it should keep Act 10 in place while the appeal is going forward. That is, in an effort to make sure there's not some kind of whiplash in the state where collective bargaining is allowed again.
Sure.
And then maybe an appeals court takes it away. Should the court just say, hey, let's hold everything steady and see what happens? And there's briefing happening on that while the appellate briefing is also moving forward. So we'll know more. In the meantime, the court has told everybody just to hang on, no collective bargaining until it decides that stay question. And we're going to go forward and we're going to have the we're going to have an appeal. It is very difficult, of course, to predict what an appellate court is going to do. But what I can tell you is, and tell the listeners, is that our legal theory is quite clear. It is simple and easy to understand. And it is based on decades of established precedent in Wisconsin of how the equal protection guarantee in the Wisconsin Constitution works. So while I can't promise that this will definitely stick, what I can say is this is not novel. This is not some kind of fancy hide the ball, magic trick. This is a really basic, nuts and bolts legal case, and it is my belief that that it should be affirmed on appeal. We'll see what happens. We'll see exactly who's on the courts and who gets to decide. But judges who are looking at this based on precedent and caring about what the law is are going to come to the same conclusion that Judge Frost came to, that Act 10, as it was written, is not constitutional in Wisconsin.
We're joined here by Jeff Mandel of Law Forward, who is talking about the recent piece that he wrote at the Recombobulation Area on Act 10 about the likelihood of this, this ruling from Dane County Circuit Judge Jacob Frost, who on December 2nd declared core provisions of the 2011 Wisconsin Act 10 law unconstitutional. So is this likely to be headed towards the Wisconsin Supreme Court, Jeff?
Oh, I think this is almost certainly going to wind up at the Wisconsin Supreme Court. Exactly what the timing on that is and things sort of remains to be seen. There's all kinds of lawyers' games that are going to get played out over the next couple of months.
There's always lawyers' games. No matter what, there's always going to be some lawyer games going on.
Yeah, there's a reason people hate lawyers.
Lawyers are great.
But after the lawyer games, what's next? Is this headed to the Wisconsin Supreme Court? And what do you expect, like, a timing on that to be?
Yeah.
Because I think that's obviously critical.
Yeah, and it's really hard to say. It's partially going to depend on what happens with the stay. If the stay is granted and there's no collective bargaining, that makes it all the more important that the Supreme Court hear the case sooner rather than later, because public sector workers in Wisconsin have already been deprived of their rights for 13 years. And if they're going to continue to be deprived of their rights while the case moves forward, then we need to get to the end so that one way or the other, we've got resolution. How exactly that works, I mean, I think there is still time. If the Supreme Court wants to hear the case this term, right? The Supreme Court works in terms, and it decides, it hears all the cases by mid-May or so, and it decides them all by around the 4th of July or so, and then it picks up again right after Labor Day the next year. So if the court wants to decide the case this term, there is still ample time for that to happen. We've certainly rushed cases through faster than that.
Let's get to work, Wisconsin Supreme Court. Yeah.
it's hard to tell. There are a lot of things that that different lawyers and parties have to do, and there are lots of things that different judges are going to get to decide in the next few weeks that'll help to illuminate what's going to happen and what kind of time frame we're on.
Yeah. And just to take a step back and recombobulate on a couple of the topics that we've been talking about here, Angela wrote a piece called Where Do We Go From Here? And you're talking about this piece on Act 10. I think one of the things in our immediate future is just where we're going to go from here in Wisconsin is we're going to have an election here on the Wisconsin Supreme Court.
Yep.
I know. Yep.
Yep. Yay.
We're going to have an election here in Wisconsin about for the Wisconsin Supreme Court. It's going to be a big deal. It's going to impact cases like this very one.
Yeah.
Maybe not this exact case. Like Jeff said, there's a lot of uncertainty. All of the legal Calvin ball that always seems to happen with all of this. But I think I'm just trying to connect these two things. Where do we go from here? And what do we understand about this? Well, one of the things that where we can go from here is to get involved in this Wisconsin Supreme Court race and having a pro-democracy majority on the Wisconsin Supreme Court and maintaining that on cases like gerrymandering, like Act 10, like a lot of the work that you folks, good folks, do with Law Forward as well.
Yeah. Well, it really couldn't be more important to have a court that cares about democracy and cares about the rule of law here in Wisconsin. And I do, for those listeners who are exhausted, and this goes to Angela's piece today, who are exhausted by hearing every single election in Wisconsin is the election of our lifetimes. It's the most important election in our state. What I can say is that if we protect a pro-democracy and protect a pro-democracy majority on the court this year in 2025, then the next two elections will not be existential for control of the court, and we will have a period where not every election in Wisconsin is the most important ever.
That's a great point, Jeff.
Thanks for your work, Jeff.
Thank you so much. We're headed to break now. Stick with us here on the Maggie Dawn Show. Thanks. Thanks, Jeff.
Thank you, bro.
You're listening to the Talk of Green Bay, WGBW, home of Mino and the Mayor.
You can always continue the conversation on social media. Share your thoughts when you find and follow Civic Media on Facebook, X, and Instagram.
Large soybean crop in South America is going to put a lid on soybean prices. I'm Charity Seebecker for the Midwest Farm Report. And market advisor Jen Heimberg with Total Farm Marketing in West Bend still saw some support this past week for a few reasons, though.
But we saw a powerful move in the soybean meal complex over the last couple of weeks. Two things came into play there. First off, investors, in terms of those hedge funds, were sitting on a record short position in soybean meal just with a potential supply of soybean meal that's out there. We actually got those commitment of trader numbers yesterday for the 24th of December, Christmas Eve, and they were sitting on 95,000 short contracts, and that by far was the largest position they've been short. Then we also got a little bit of a talk of maybe some drying forecasts in Argentina. You're looking at a market that has zero weather premium in it. So we saw a big jump in soybean meal prices, about $30 a ton here over a handful of days.
That's John Heimberg, market advisor with Total Farm Marketing. I'll look at your closing markets right after this.
You see the headlines all the time. Consumers confused by food labels. Well, not if they shop at Bavaria Sausage. Fabulous Farm Babe Pam Yonke here, asking you to take a closer look at the food labels at Bavaria Sausage. You know, they are working towards making sure when you take a look at whatever product they've got in the store, you know exactly what it is. They're using different colors. They're also making sure that there's a picture on that label to help you better understand the protein source that you're looking at. It's all about making sure they're combining the old world flavors, the artisan blends, and making sure that you understand when there's something new in the showcase, what is it and where did it come from? Simple information, easily understood. And of course, there's always someone there to answer your questions if you've got them. Bavaria Sausage at the corner of Nesbitt Road, Fitchrona Road in Fitchburg, located also online, BavariaSausage.com. Old recipes, new labels. Take a look.
I'm Charity Seebecker for the Midwest Farm Report with a look at your closing markets. Cash corn closed at 458.5, up 6.25. New crop corn closed at 443.75, up 4.75. January cash beans closed at 998.25, up 16.25 cents. And November new crop beans closed at 1025.25, up 17 cents. March cash wheat closed at 551.5, up 3.25. And July 2025 new crop wheat closed at 569.5, also up 3.25 cents. January classic milk contract is trading at 2031 100 weight, down 12 cents, and February milk is trading at 2034, down 33 cents. Barrel cheese closed at 182.5, up 1.75. 40-pound block cheese had no change and closed at 191, and the AA butter closed down 2 cents and closed at 255. For the Midwest Farm Report, I'm Charity Seebecker.
Enjoying this local program? Find the complete Civic Media lineup at civicmedia.us or the Civic Media app.
More clouds than sunshine today, with a few flurries flying around out there, putting down just a trace. With breezy winds out of the northwest, it's creating wind chills about 10 degrees cooler, with highs today only expected to reach the low 20s. And the entire weekend, with highs in the teens, it'll be feeling more like the single digits. I'm meteorologist Brittany Merlot. It's 26 degrees at our studios.
Matt Nair on air. This shouldn't be a thing.
Hot Dr. Pepper is the hottest holiday drink, but is it any good?
Jane, I'd like to answer that question.
Yes.
No. Have you ever had a hot soda in your life?
Yes, they're terrible. You can also do apparently 80% eggnog and 20% Dr. Pepper.
Get out of my country.
Matt Nair on air. Weekdays 10 till noon on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app. The Todd Alba Show.
What's going on in Washington today as we move into 2025? Have your antenna up. Don't rely on all the media sources. Just your own wisdom, your own heart, your own gut. Listen to what they're saying about our friends and neighbors and family. Because we innately know these people that we live with every day in our communities. Don't allow words and thoughts to tear us apart. Hold fast to that which we know, which is good.
The Todd Alba Show. Weekdays noon till 2 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app. Jane Matt Nair and Greg Bach.
Coming up on the show, hard to believe the one-year anniversary of Matt Nair on air. We're going to celebrate and wrap it all up with This Shouldn't Be a Thing. I hope you can join us.
Matt Nair on air, weekday mornings at 10.
Welcome back to the Maggie Dawn Show. I'm your guest host this afternoon. My name is Dan Schaefer. I'm here in studio with my co-host for the day, Angela Lang, and with producer Cardi on the board, bringing us some great tunes in and out of those breaks here. We do appreciate that.
Yeah.
For sure, man.
So we just had a great conversation with Jeff Mandel from Law Forward, talking about the implications of overturning Act 10, whether it's going to stick, why this is different this time. And you had some thoughts about this, about how it kind of connected to some of the larger issues that you were discussing in your piece today as well, about where we go from here.
I mean, because like the whole thing from Act 10, and I've been on numerous shows where we talked about this, including with Matt after like Labor Day and stuff too, right? Yeah. Like, what does it look like of labor history in Wisconsin?
Right.
And I worked for a labor union for 3 years, which will feel like an eternity. And being able to kind of see how people didn't always view themselves as political, but they were proud to be a part of the union. Or not every union household, you know, voted for Democratic candidates, right? Mm-hmm. But there was something about the sacredness about being in a union that I think people felt that I think is gone. And so when we're thinking about where do we go from here, also thinking about the new-ish, and I would say new-ish since like maybe Bernie Sanders, like this class consciousness. And I think to his credit, him, AOC, I think kind of kicked it off in the 2016 election. I think it's only grown even more when we're talking about Amazon workers or Starbucks workers on strike. I saw that there was a picket, I believe, last week outside of the Starbucks on like in Milwaukee. Mm-hmm. So like all of these things are happening. And if we're talking about where do we go from here, I think there is kind of like the broad where do we go from here? And then there's like a very tangible where does Wisconsin go from here in this moment? And it's one of the things understanding people's understanding and in some ways newfound class consciousness. This feels like something that Wisconsin needs to do to kind of set that history right, knowing our broad history with unions.
Yeah, but I think it has to be something. It can't just be returning to something of the past.
Oh, yeah.
It has to be, in a way, charting some sort of new course forward.
The past also wasn't working.
Because the past also wasn't working. That's exactly right. And I think that's what, you know, we can't just be defenders of what the establishment currently is or what it was.
Yes.
You can't just be like, oh, we're going to go back to a pre-Act 10 era of Wisconsin. Yeah. You have to figure out what the next chapter is going to be. And I think connecting those dots there, you know, about class consciousness, about, you know, the unions and all of that. But I think we also have to recognize how much has happened in those almost 14 years.
It's not the same playing field.
It's not the same playing field. We have, I think Wisconsin experienced the most dramatic drop in union membership of any state in the country over the past 14 years. And you know, part of that is strategic to limit the power of unions. But also, you know, we've seen Donald Trump and this version of the Republican Party make overtures to those unions as well. And I think, you know, I think back to when I was covering the RNC in Milwaukee and the first night of the RNC, the final speaker of the night was the head of the Teamsters.
Right.
And so I think, you know, and it gets back to the point that you were making in your piece of saying, like, we shouldn't shame the individuals for making a decision in the election. It should be about, you know, where the institutions and the organizations and the leadership in the Democratic Party, in, you know, the groups that are connected to the larger Democratic Party extended universe, right? And how those can be part of, you know, the class consciousness that you're talking about going forward.
Yeah. I mean, and I think there's also an opportunity to reconcile, right? Because there, you know, the fact that there was union folks at the RNC, we're talking about how union folks are going to be directly impacted right now.
Yeah.
What does that look like? Are they no longer our union brothers and sisters? Are we no longer in kind of, you know, the struggle with them? And also, I think a lot of folks maybe that are part of a union but decided to support Trump, how do they reconcile? And this is something I want to keep thinking about, and I alluded to it in the piece, is like, how do working class folks that voted for Trump sit and reconcile with Trump surrounding himself with people like Elon Musk and billionaires? Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's something that I didn't.
And stacking his cabinet with just like billionaire after
billionaire. Yeah. Like, that's the one thing I never quite could like fully wrap my head around. I mean, there's a lot of things in the mega universe I can't wrap my head around. But like, It's
a discombobulating universe.
Very much so. I'm like, what is happening? But if you say, you know, Trump is going to lower tariffs or grocery prices are going to go down or all of these different things, and you're talking about how the wealthy can't relate, and maybe that's why you didn't support Kamala for whatever reason, you're saying all of these things. How do you, what type of mental gymnastics do you have to do to be like, yeah, I still have full confidence that Trump is going to lower groceries when he's surrounding himself with billionaires and doing all of these tax credits and all these things through billionaires? At some point, those voters will need to reconcile with that.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know what that looks like.
And I think that's, I've thought about that speech from, and I think Sean O'Brien, was that the president of the team?
Yeah.
That speech at the RNC. And he's talking about things like challenging corporate power and introducing paid leave and greater benefits for union members. And I'm sitting there, you know, as the lefty columnist, recombobulationary guy, just thinking like, some of that stuff sounds pretty good. I don't know. I would love to have had like a live reaction feed of like Scott Walker and Robin Voss while Sean O'Brien was saying what he did. And I had a couple of good conversations with people over the course of the week about that speech, because I thought it was so interesting.
Yeah.
But it again goes to the kind of the difference between Trump on the campaign trail and Trump governing.
Yeah.
Because I think Trump on the campaign trail wants to have his like we talked about before, getting those low propensity voters and bringing people who are not necessarily part of the political process into the political process.
Yeah.
And about, having a bigger tent, having, you know, LGBT speakers at the RNC or like Amber Rose and Sean O'Brien. And like,
so weird.
It can be very weird, but America's a weird country.
It works.
So you need
clearly
some weird folks on your side if you're going to run for things.
True.
But again, it goes back to, we saw him govern for 4 years as president as well. And so we know what was the largest accomplishment that he had from a legislative standpoint, giving a giant tax break that overwhelmingly benefited the wealthiest in the country. And you look at like the type of, you know, oh, we're going to bring back manufacturing to the Midwest and things like that. He did Foxconn.
Right.
And it's just like, we have so many examples of just the rhetoric does not match the reality.
Mm-hmm.
And I think when we go forward, you know, you could talk to people about like, oh, I liked the rhetoric of, you know, I think there were more similarities of Trump's 2016 campaign and his 2024 campaign than the 2020 campaign.
Agreed.
When he was having to run on his terrible record. Where he is instead, you know, running on this type of like new Republican Party that he's introducing. But where we go from here of it all is holding him accountable for saying those types of things and what the reality, whether the reality matches the rhetoric this time around, because it certainly did not last time around.
I feel, and I've said this before, it might have been one of like the post whatever analysis that we did, but I feel like that whole campaign was ran off of like vibes, right? Like he could just say whatever he wanted. And people will be like, but how? Oh, we're going to do this. We're going to, like, people could say,
we're going to lower prices. How? We'll just do it.
Right. Yeah. And people were like, okay, like how desperate and how rough were some people's plight and pain in lives that people were like, all right, he didn't say how I was going to do it, but at least he said it. So I'm just going to go over here. Mm-hmm. Right. Cause I'm going to have at least a little bit of hope because he's at least talking about it. I want us all, and we talked as we walked in the building that we don't really do New Year's resolutions, but I want us all to just like, not saying we need to go the way of full-blown conspiracy theories. We don't need to do all that. But I just need us to use a little bit more critical thinking skills. Just because Trump says, I want to do this and it sounds good, we have to ask the questions.
Yeah.
Right? Like the devil's in the details all the time. And I think that's how we ended up in a place, because he said things that sounded good. And even though he couldn't back them up, Kamala wasn't saying them at all.
Mm-hmm. Well, and the thing about Trump is it's just like he says so much.
Yeah,
he's
also
just like
that.
He's doing these 2-hour speeches like three times a day, you know, doing these marathon podcasts with the Joe Rogans of the world and all of that. And he just says so many things that you have no idea what his policies are actually going to be.
Right. Also that.
And so like I think that's where we go from here, too, is just like, we have to not get swept up in just like what he says.
Yes.
It has to be more about what he does.
Yes.
And because he says I'm very trying not to swear on the air right now.
This is a lot.
Cardi, be ready with that mute button if we need it here. But he says so much BS, and he says so many different things that you don't know what he's actually going to do. Like, I was thinking about the Joe Rogan interview that he did.
Did you watch all of it?
I didn't watch all of it.
I was going to be like,
there was a couple
wow.
clips. No, I didn't, you know. I probably should watch all of it, but just for, like, archival brain, archival purposes. But he had, there was one thing that he was, like, floating out there, and just, like, you know, he wants to raise tariffs.
Yeah.
And one of the things that he said in there is there was a story that came out that same day as that podcast where he was just like, wanted to get rid of all income taxes and do it all on tariffs. And just like a dramatic change in the American tax code and economy and like so many different things.
Again, vibes.
And Joe Rogan was like asking him, he's like, do you really want to do that? And Trump's like, yeah, sure. Why not? And this is the problem. He's just such a moving target. Oh, my gosh.
That was perfect.
Nicely done, Cardi. It's just, he's such a moving target on all of it.
Yeah.
Whether it's, you know, tariffs or abortion or deportations or so many of these different things.
Yeah.
He's just said so much.
It's hard to prioritize. And it's also hard to keep straight.
And that's the strategy. It's just to have this, like, wall of sound where you just don't hear any actual message come through. You just hear all of the nonsense.
It's all just ridiculous. And that's the thing is that, like, we have to have a higher threshold. It's like, yes, I see how people are like, well, at least he's acknowledging my issue, whereas this other side isn't even acknowledging it. Like, we have to have a higher standard for that. It's just like, cool, anybody can say that, like, I want to give everybody a puppy because they're cute. Ask how that's going to get done, right? And then we also can talk about the higher standards that we give other people, because when Kamala had her own policies, positions, plans, well, how are you going to get that done in a divided Congress? Well, who's going to pay for that? You aren't asking those same questions around a guy who wrote a plan in a crayon and is going off of it.
Joe Rogan was not asking those follow-up
Shocker
questions.
Shocker that the man named Joe Rogan is not asking critical questions. And
you know, I did not think the host of Fear Factor and The Apprentice would be this big of a part of our lives 20-plus years later, but here we are.
My mom used to love Fear Factor, and, like, when it was on, and, like, Joe Rogan, like, I loved it as a kid, and just, like, younger me had no idea that this is where Joe Rogan would end up.
Did any of us know where this was going?
I also didn't know
going?
Trump was going to go this way. I remember still in, like, 2016, we're like, okay, yeah, we can stop with this Trump joke now. Okay, he's not going to win. We can stop now, right? And then here we are.
And here we are.
Eight years later.
He's the most, you know, I was thinking about this too. If we're, you know, at the one quarter mark for the century, right? With 2025.
Yeah.
And I think, with Donald Trump being the dominant political figure for the last three elections, the last decade now.
It
was 2015.
Enough.
He came down the golden escalator, right?
It's true.
I think if you're looking back at this quarter century, I think Donald Trump is the most influential going to go down as the most influential politician from this quarter century. As much as that hurts my Democrat millennial heart that it is not Barack
Obama. I don't
Obama,
hate that.
But I think it is. Donald Trump is going to be the most influential politician from this era.
I agree.
Cardi's really got the sound effects going, and I do appreciate
tell me how
it.
You really feel, Cardi.
Yeah, yeah.
No, like I agree, and I also think a lot of people were very upset that Time put Trump on the cover of, like, Man of the Year or Person of the Year or whatever it was. And it was funny because I saw the clip of when the editor announced it on the Today Show. And, you know, he's kind of teeing it up. And, like, he does not look enthused himself personally. Like, his reaction as he's announcing this on the Today Show was, like, not enthusiastic. But it's true, though. Like, I don't like it. But at the same time, there's a reason that man is on the cover.
Yeah.
I hate it.
You win an election, you're probably going to be Person of the Year.
Yeah. There's a lot of influence. Like, obviously, we don't like his level of influence, and it's very dangerous, but that doesn't minimize the effect of it.
Exactly. That award was not best guy.
Yeah, no. Most lovable politician. Yeah, that's
and
not
that's
it.
What I'm saying, too, is, like, when I'm saying the most influential politician of the first quarter of the century, it's not best politician.
Exactly.
It's most influential. And I think, you know, that's the new world that we're going into in the where we go from here and all of that as Trump 2.0 term begins. You're listening to The Maggie Don Show. I'm your guest host, Dan Schaefer. Here with Angela Lang, who is co-hosting, producer Cardi. We've only got a few more minutes of the show. We've almost made it all the way through.
Yeah.
How about that? So stick with us for one more segment here on The Maggie Don Show. We'll be
97.9 WGBW and WGBW.FM. The possibility of lung cancer can be pretty scary, especially if you're one of approximately 8 million current or former smokers at high risk. That's why SaveByTheScan.org wants you to know that now there's a breakthrough low-dose CT scan that can detect lung cancer early, and it only takes 60 seconds. You stop smoking, now start screening. For an easy quiz to see if you're eligible, visit SaveByTheScan.org. It could save your life. SaveByTheScan.org is brought to you by the American Lung Association's Lung Force Initiative and the Ad Council.
Matt Nair on air. This shouldn't be a thing.
Hot Dr. Pepper is the hottest holiday drink, but is it any good?
Jane, I'd like to answer that question.
Yes.
No. Have you ever had a hot soda in your life?
Yes, they're terrible. You can also do apparently 80% eggnog and 20% Dr. Pepper.
Get out of my country.
Matt Nair on air. Weekdays 10 till noon on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app. The Todd Alba Show.
What's going on in Washington today as we move into 2025? Have your antenna up. Don't rely on all the media sources. Just your own wisdom, your own heart, your own gut. Listen to what they're saying about our friends and neighbors and family. Because we innately know these people that we live with every day in our communities. Don't allow words and thoughts to tear us apart. Hold fast to that which we know, which is good.
The Todd Alba Show. Weekdays, noon till 2 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app.
Missed your favorite show live on air? It's easy to find what you enjoy wherever you listen to podcasts, including Spotify, Apple, and Google Podcasts. And we're always streaming on TuneIn and the Civic Media app. Fear you may be missing out? We're always streaming on TuneIn and the Civic Media app. Enjoy listening live or catch up by finding the podcast at civicmedia.us or wherever you enjoy listening to your podcasts.
From Denmark to De Pere, this is 97.9 WGBW.
Welcome back to the Maggie Don Show. I'm your guest host this afternoon, Dan Schaefer of the Recombobulation Area. I'm joined here in studio with Angela Lang as my co-host today. And we just have one more segment of the show left. Yeah. All of a sudden, it went fast.
It flies every time.
It flies. So I wanted to talk to you about this. There was a really interesting piece I read over the holidays, and I wanted to talk about this on the show. And the title of the piece from the publication called Semaphore was The Things We Got Wrong in 2024. So the piece goes, interviews like, I don't know, dozens of media figures who all chimed in with what they got wrong in 2024. And I like this as an exercise.
Yes.
Because I think it brings some, you know, kind of self-reflection, some accountability.
Yeah.
You know, there's a lot of people in the media who will throw around a lot of takes about certain things and then never return to them and say like, hey, maybe
I was wrong
about this.
Yeah.
And whatever. So we only have just a few minutes to go through this. So we'll just each do one. One thing that we each got wrong in 2024 before we turn the page to 2025 here.
So to be clear, in prepping for this, I had a long list, but I will do one. I think a lot of us, including myself, underestimated like how much people were actually hurting and how that impacted how they were going to show up and some of the desperation that I think led to it. I think we knew that people were deeply cynical, but I think that there was this idea of like people are going to drag their feet as long as possible, but then they're just going to show up at the end of the day. You know, there's going to be like kind of the surge of energy. Okay, fine. We're going to do what we need to do. I don't like it, but we're going to do it. And like that didn't happen. And I think it was rooted in people being just feeling just so hurt, you know, whether through the economy or however they're experiencing the economy, how they're dealing with, you know, trauma in other ways. And I think people really were like, screw it, let's throw something at the wall and see if it sticks, because I remember what happened with these checks in 2020 and I need those again. But then also conversely, people severely underestimated things like Project 2025 and said, that's so ridiculous, that could never happen, that's just a scare tactic. So I think you know, both kind of sides kind of missed that mark, and then also how it showed up in the November election too.
Yeah. I will say one thing that I got wrong is I thought the Liz Cheney overtures would matter in the end.
I did too.
And I think, you know,
I didn't like it, but I thought it would do a thing.
I didn't like it either.
Yeah.
And I, you know, I came of age as a Bush era.
Yep.
Anti-Bush.
Yep.
Liberal. And so anybody with the Cheney name, I'm just going to be like, what are we doing here? But I, one of the things that made me think that that was going to make a difference was the midterm results in 2022. Mm. And like all of the election denier type candidates, really lost and lost in bigger numbers than I think a lot of people expected.
Yeah.
You know, you had Tim Michaels losing in Wisconsin. You had, Carrie Lake losing in Illinois.
Yeah.
Arizona.
Yeah.
And you had a lot of these types of candidates who were, you know, very much part of that like Trump MAGA election denier fringe, and they all lost. And it's, I thought the Liz Cheney piece would give some sort of permission structure for people who had voted Republican in the past. Mm-hmm. And this being the first presidential election since January 6th, since so many of the, you know, and in Wisconsin, it was like the Gableman stuff. And like each state had these versions of it.
Mm-hmm.
And so I thought, you know, that that choice of, you know, bringing Liz Cheney to Ripon, Wisconsin, and bringing her to Waukesha County, I thought that would make a little bit more of a difference than it did. And now I think, it, you know, and Ben Wickler mentioned this in his interview on The Daily Show, is just saying that, like, you know, we did a little bit better in Waukesha County. Like that was still, you know, still moving in our direction, but it didn't move enough.
Yeah.
And I think that's, and I think part of catering an election strategy to suburban ex-Republicans, I think that can come at the expense of, you know, losses elsewhere.
Your base,
and so, like, I think those working class voters in Western Wisconsin that have really zoomed towards Trump in the last couple election cycles, you know, less so in 2020, much more so in this last election, I think bringing in, and those were voters who were very much like Obama voters in 2008, and they wanted that change as well. And I think, you know, bringing the Cheney name back into the mix. And maybe the lesson here is just who runs against the Bush-Cheney administration the hardest is going to win the election.
Seriously.
But I thought that would work, and I don't think that it did.
I mean, I get the strategy of why I didn't like it, as again the same first thing I got involved
it was like tough pill to swallow, but let's do it.
And I think it did make up some ground. I saw the strategy, I knew what they were doing, but at the same time it did, as you said, it didn't make up enough ground. And I don't think it took away votes, but it did piss people off. Right, like if like us lefties, we still did what we needed to do, but people were not happy about that. But like, it's at the end of the day, hindsight's 2020. I'm curious their line of thinking or information or data or polling that saw that gave them the idea that this was a path to close the gap. Again, I see the strategy, but part of me is like, what were y'all thinking?
Yeah.
What did you know that
there
we
were trade-offs in that strategy?
Exactly.
And that I saw the strategy too. And I saw like half of undecided voters are these, you know, suburban Republican, whatever. But I think if you're emphasizing catering a message to the suburbs, it's going to come at the expense of some working class voters. And I think that's what happened in a lot of ways, too. So I was wrong on that one.
Yeah. I mean,
I'll take the L. That's OK.
We all, I think, figured out some stuff. And I let this be an example that we all should reflect on what we got wrong, including consultants.
Yeah.
But let's do more of this.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's okay. It's not hard. It's not scary. It's fine. Yeah. We were wrong. Okay.
Yeah, we can move on. We can. This is what the recombobulation process is.
Exactly.
Yes. Well, thank you all for joining us for this afternoon. I will be back in this chair tomorrow, guest hosting the Maggie Dawn Show as well. I'll be joined by another award-winning recombobulation area contributor, Phil Rocco.
Shout out, Phil.
He's going to be joining us tomorrow. Angela, thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
Studio.
Super fun.
And thanks to all of you in the Civic Media Extended Universe for listening today. Thanks to Cardi on the board. And stay tuned for what's next here across the Civic Media Network.
This is the Talk of Green Bay, WGBW. Todd Albaugh.
Hey, everybody, join us next time for a special TGIF edition of the show. Peter Rapine, managing editor of EPOM's World, will be here with a humorous look at the week in review. Join us.
The Todd Albaugh Show, weekdays noon till 2.
The Todd Alba Show.
What's going on in Washington today as we move into 2025? Have your antenna up. Don't rely on all the media sources. Just your own wisdom, your own heart, your own gut. Listen to what they're saying about our friends and neighbors and family. Because we innately know these people that we live with every day in our communities. Don't allow words and thoughts to tear us apart. Hold fast to that which we know, which is good.
The Todd Alba Show. Weekdays, noon till 2 on your local civic media radio station and on the app. This is your local civic media radio station. Want to hear even more? Anytime? Find all of it at civicmedia.us. This is 97.9 WGBW Denmark, Green Bay's real news and great conversation, a civic media radio station.
This is a special report from ABC News, New Orleans Attack. I'm Dave Packer. Bourbon Street is back open after the deadly car ramming attack early New Year's Day, and the Sugar Bowl, which was delayed yesterday, is being played right now. President Biden this afternoon.
People in New Orleans are sending an unmistakable message. They will not let this attack or the attackers with this deluded ideology overcome us.
And the investigation continues into that attack that killed 14 people. Dozens are injured. The driver of that truck that rammed the crowd, shot dead by police, is now believed to have been a lone wolf. FBI Assistant Deputy Director Christopher Rea.
We do not assess at this point that anyone else involved in this attack is involved in this attack except for Shamsuddin Jabbar.
Jabbar, an Army veteran from Texas, is believed to have been radicalized over the past several months. His truck found with an ISIS flag inside. This is ABC News.
I'm Lisa Hale with WGBW.